Well, we've come to that time of the year again when the Sabbath, the Passover rather, is almost upon us. And I thought what I'd like to do is, some years ago, in going through one of the commentaries, it says there that there are 10 Passovers mentioned in the Bible. So I thought it'd be rather interesting to go through them. And when I went through them, I noticed that in every case, there was a different aspect attached to each of these 10 events. So what we'd like to do is, perhaps a bit unusual for a sermonette, to go through 10 scriptures. We'll miss the first one, how's that? Exodus 12, I mean, we all know Exodus 12, the original Passover. But the lessons, I mean, there are so many that come out. We have whole sermons on it. But surely the one that really does stand out is that they had to obey to survive. If they didn't, the firstborn would have died. So that was the first Passover. Let's go to the second Passover. Second Passover is in Numbers chapter 9. We turn to chapter 9 of Numbers. Because this is almost like the second one recorded emphasizes the importance of the first one. Because an event here happens which is quite, you wouldn't have thought of straight off. Numbers 9, verse 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai on the first day of the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt. So they were just into the wilderness. Let the children of Israel, verse 2, keep the Passover at its appointed time. On the, in verse 3, it says, on the 14th day of this month at twilight, you shall keep it according to its appointed time. And drop down to verse 6, because here's the problem, you see. Now there were certain men who were defiled by the dead body of a man, so that they could not keep the Passover on the day. And they came before Moses and Aaron, because obviously they had a problem. Look at Moses' reaction, verse 8. And Moses said to them, stand still, that I may hear what the Lord will command concerning you. So there's where he goes to for the information. And in verse 9, and the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, if any one of you or your posterity, so that comes right down to us today, is unclean because of a dead body, or, as is more like today, is far away on a journey, he may still keep the Lord's Passover on the 14th day of the second month. This day, this event, is so vital in our lives that if for some reason we miss it first time round, there is a second chance. And of course the sting is down in verse 13. But the man who is clean and is not on a journey and ceases to keep the Passover, the same person shall be cut off from among his people because he did not bring the offering of the Eternal at its appointed time. That man shall bear his sin. So the Passover is just vital. The third Passover mentioned is in Joshua. If you turn to Joshua 5, they'd just come out of the wilderness. The Jordan had dried up, they'd walked across, and right in front of them was one big problem. One huge, heavily fortified city, Jericho. So chapter 5, verse 10, it says, so the children of Israel camped at Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at twilight on the plains of Jericho. Now, if you drop down to verse 13, remember the situation here. They are totally unarmed. They have been living in the desert for 40 years. It's probably the only weapon they had was a dinner knife, if they had even one of those. Verse 13, and it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho, that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man stood opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. I don't know about you, but if that had been me, I'd have been practicing my 10 second 100 yards. Not Joshua. He just went up to him and said, are you for us or for our adversaries? You know, state your side. Verse 14, so he said, no, but as commander of the army of the Eternal, I have now come. And Joshua fell on his face on the earth and worshipped him and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant? You don't worship angels. That was Jesus Christ. And down in verse 6, chapter 6, verse 2, and the Eternal said to Joshua, see, I have given Jericho unto your hand, its king and all the mighty men of valor. I have given you... Hello, it hasn't happened yet. I think Mr. Balls brought that out in the sermon recently when it says, when something's prophetic, it's just as well as it's happened. I have given you. That's it. It's all over. It's done. Finish. All you've got to do, and then you can follow the story there. They had to march around the city and so on. The keeping of the Passover, again, is very interesting here. Many, many lessons, but one stands out. No matter how great the obstacle, Christ is always with his people in this time, actual occasion, in person, as captain of the Lord's host. Now, the next one, I'll do a bit of a backtrack here because we've got a Chronicles first. Second Chronicles 30. This is the time of Hezekiah. We drop back to 29, actually. Chapter 29, Hezekiah 1, 29 verse 1. Hezekiah became king when he was 25 years old, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. And drop down to verse 3, it says, in the first year of his reign, he didn't waste any time, in the first month, he opened the doors of the house of the Eternal and repaired them. So that set the scene for what followed. Down verse 20, he restores the actual temple worship. He gets rid of all the nasty horribles that were going on. And then, in chapter 30, verse 1, and Hezekiah sent to all Israel and Judah, and also wrote letters to Ephraim and Manasseh, that they should come to the house of the Eternal at Jerusalem to keep the Passover to the Eternal God of Israel. So they sent these letters out around the country. Verse 10 of 2 Chronicles 30. So the runners passed from city to city throughout the country of Ephraim and Manasseh, as far as Zebulun. But they laughed them to scorn and mocked them. If you tried going around here today, in this country, to get people to keep the Passover, I think you'd get pretty much the same response. Nevertheless, some came from Asher, Manasseh, and Zebulun, humbled themselves, and came to Jerusalem. Now here's the interesting point here. And the hand of God was on Judah to give them singleness of heart to do the commandments of the king and the leaders at the word of the Eternal. There's the key there. The people who kept the Passover were selected by God. God gave some the singleness of mind to come, while the others scoffed. And this was such an event that down in verse 23, it says, then the whole assembly agreed to keep the feast another 7 days, and they kept it another 7 days with gladness. So we have a precedent this year. It's really good up there. We might just stay for another week. Now we've got to go back now for the fifth Passover recorded. 2 Kings 23. Again, this is another time of revival under the young king Josiah. If you start in... 2 Kings 22. Josiah was 8 years old when he became king. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Eternal and walked in all the ways of his father David. He did not turn aside from the right or from the left. At 8 years old. Verse 8 of the same chapter, they start cleaning up the temple. And Hilkiah, the high priest, said to Shaphan the scribe, I have found the book of the law in the house of the Eternal. They actually found, in other words, they didn't have it. They found it. And of course, this was an exciting time. So Josiah, then in chapter 23, restores the temple worship. He gets rid of, they must have had a right clean out. First of all, chapter 23, verse 4. The king commanded Hilkiah the high priest and the priest of the second order and the doorkeepers to bring out of the temple of the Eternal all the articles that were made for Baal, for Ashtoreth, and for all the host of heaven. And he burned them outside Jerusalem in the fields of Kidron and carried their ashes to Bethel. And that was just the start of it. They cleaned out the priests, they cleaned out the groves. And even in verse 10, and he defiled Topheth, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, that no man might make his son or daughter to pass through the fire to Moloch. He stopped it. He's the one that stopped it. Nothing really changes today. You know, you think, well, they'd never do that in the 20th century. Well, most of the abortions that happen in hospitals end up in the incinerator. Is there any great difference, really? Horrible. Going over now to 23, verse 21. Verse 21, and the king commanded all the people, saying, keep the Passover to the Lord your God, as it is written in this book of the covenant. Surely such a Passover had never been held since the days of the judges who judged Israel, nor in all the days of the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah. The lesson, I think, here is the act of putting sin out is directly linked to the Passover. They cleaned all the mess out, and then they kept the Passover. Six. Again, another time of renewal. Ezra. Turn to Ezra 6. Ezra chapter 6. And verse 19. Here we have the temple has been completed and it's been dedicated. And it says in verse 19, and the descendants of the captivity kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. For the priests and the Levites were had purified themselves. All of them were ritually clean. And they slaughtered the Passover lambs for all the descendants of the captivity, for their brethren, the priests, and for themselves. And here's the key in this particular Passover. Then the children of Israel who had returned from the captivity ate together with all who had separated themselves from the filth or the uncleanness of the nations of the land in order to seek the Lord God of Israel. It says, and they kept the feast of unleavened bread 7 days with joy, for the Eternal made them joyful. See, it's God that does all this. And turned the heart of the king of Assyria toward them to strengthen their hands in the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. So that not only did God show them favor and make them joyful, but he also gave them favor in the eyes of what really, in truth, is the enemy, the Assyrians. The key here is they had separated themselves from the filthiness or the uncleanness of the heathen of the land. We now go across into the final four, into the New Testament. It is amazing if you think. We have 4,000 years of history here of the people of God, and this is all the information we've got on Passover. Some of the holy days, there's even less information. Luke chapter 2. Again, very interesting time here. Verse 40. And the child grew and became strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. And his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of Passover. So we know here that we've got very little information on Christ's life until he started his ministry. But this point we are given, that he was in Jerusalem with his parents and they were keeping the Passover. And they did it every year. Number 8, turn over to John 2. The last three, I'm going to turn too many pages because they're all in John. John 2, verse 13. Now the Passover of the Jews was at hand and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And he found in the temple those who sold oxen and sheep and doves, and the money changers were doing business. When he had made a whip out of cords, he drove them out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen, and poured out the money changers' money and overturned the tables. And he said to those who sold doves, take these things away. Do not make my Father's house a house of merchandise. I think the lesson here is Christ removes sin from the house of God. If you turn over a little to John 6, John chapter 6 and verse 32, I think it is. But it started off at the beginning of John 6, the feeding of the great multitude. It says in verse 4, now the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near. So this one's just very, very near the Passover. But of course, John 6 is one of those chapters that much time has been spent in. There's much, much, much information here. And verse 32, of course, is the interesting, we go here. The Jews, of course, were saying, our fathers ate the manna in the desert. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. And Jesus said to them, most assuredly, I say to you, Moses did not give you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. And they said to them, Lord, give us this bread always. In other words, Jesus was saying to them, I am the bread of life. I am as essential for your life as the bread that you eat, the physical bread that you eat. The sad part about it is, of course, at the end of this chapter, most of them didn't understand, and they left him, and he was left just with the 12. Now, the last Passover, the 10th one, is in... Well, it's actually in Matthew 26 and John 13, but we'll stick in John 13 because it says turning over a lot of pages. This is the last Passover, right before Christ died. I'll just read you what it says in Matthew 26. Matthew 26, 14, it says, and the disciples did as Jesus had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover. Verse 20, now when the even was come, he sat down with the 12, and as they did eat, he said, verily I say to you that one of you shall betray me. Now, if you go into the John 13, it says down in verse 5, after that he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. And this must have stunned them, because this was the job of the most menial, lowliest servant in the house. And of course we have this incident with Simon Peter here where, you know, he got a bit excited about things. And right at verse 11, and Christ said, it says he knew who would betray him. Therefore he said, you are not all clean. And down in verse 27, now after the piece of bread, Satan entered him. Then Jesus said to him, what you do, do quickly. So what I'd like to just point out there is, the servant who washed the feet of guests who came to the master's house was regarded as the lowliest of servants. Christ took on this role for our example. And the amazing thing is, he even washed the feet of the man who betrayed him. I think that leaves you absolutely speechless. I'm sure we wouldn't have done anything like that if we knew that somebody was going to sell us down the river. So those are the 10 Passovers that are recorded in the Bible. So if you just quickly recap as we've gone through... As we go through another Passover season, if you just keep these things, it might be interesting to go back over these scriptures and just read the whole lead up to each of these Passovers, because each one is a tremendous event in itself. Obedience to the commandments of God. For the firstborn to survive, they had to keep the Passover. The keeping of the Passover is vital for God's people. If for some reason we miss, there is provision in the law to take it again a month later. No matter how great the obstacles that we face, and I think we're coming up to a few interesting ones in the very near future, we've got to remember that Christ is always there. And he is also the head of an army that isn't really fazed by B-52s and stealth bombers and cruise missiles. The people who kept the Passover were selected by God. God gave them the singleness of mind. And the act of putting out sin, again, is directly linked to this Passover and the Passover season. We are to separate ourselves from the filthiness of the heathen of the land. And there's surely plenty of that around. And it says in Revelation 18, you know, come out of her, my people, and be not partakers of her sins. And you will not receive her plagues. We know little of Christ's life, apart from his birth, really, and before his ministry. But this we know, at age 12, he was with his parents, and his parents were keeping the Passover. That is recorded. And right at the end, it was Christ that removed the sin from the house of God. It's interesting about the merchandising in the house of God, and we hear of events that have taken place recently, with millions of dollars changing hands from things that shouldn't have been sold in the first place. As supposedly in the temple of God. Christ is the bread of life that we also desperately need. And that the servant that washes the feet is the lowliest of servants. Christ took on this role for us. And as I say, he even was prepared to wash the feet of the man that betrayed him and caused him to be put to death. So it's fascinating to read these 10. I would urge you to, at this time, to go through these scriptures, because every time you go through them, it's a completely different story of the same event over a period of almost some 2,000 years. It is truly amazing, and it's a lesson to us all today.